Nikki Giovanni is one of the most celebrated poets of her generation. Her unique style weaves together strong family ties, her experiences as an African-American woman growing up in the South, and her pride as an activist. Nikki Giovanni is speaking tomorrow at Georgia Southern University. Her lecture is part of the university's annual Martin Luther King Jr. celebration. On Second Thought, host Celeste Headlee recently spoke with Giovanni.
I wanted to ask about the title of the speech that you'll be giving, because you've called it The Right to Dream. And it strikes me because I guess I would never question whether we had a right to dream or not. What does that mean?
I think, and especially in this day and age, I think that many people are afraid to dream. I think that they are trying to be too practical, and they want to be, they think that they should have to explain what it is they want in life. Nobody can say, well, I think, you know, I look at the moon. My generation, you know, we looked at the moon and the stars, and we wondered, oh, I wonder if we can go there. And, of course, we did. We just recently, I'm a Tennessean by birth, but I grew up in Ohio. And, of course, John Glenn meant so much to us. But we now know, I knew because I study Black history, but we now know how much Black women had to do with John Glenn's space flight. And you have a right to look up at the stars. Can you imagine being John Glenn looking at the stars and saying, oh, I want to go there. And somebody saying, John, that's crazy. You don't have a right to think like that. You need to get a job. But he had a right to dream. And his dream and the dream of the Black women who actually put their math skills together made that happen. Am I making sense? I think that we need to continue to dream, because we're living now, in all fairness to everybody. We have an administration coming in that is vicious and full of lies, actually, and pushing people down. And I think that what we need right now, 2017, we need to continue to dream. We need to say, now where can we go and how can we do it? And what can we do to make the Earth and space? How can we find our way into space and what life form might be there?
So you're referring to the movie Hidden Figures, which actually out-earned Rogue One. And, so it has been seen by a huge number of people. How different is the environment now for young people where there's I'm not saying that racism is over by any stretch of the means, but there are more things like the movie Hidden Figures celebrating the contributions of people of color than there were when you were growing up. What kind of difference does that make?
I think that what we have to remember is, one, integration has been very, very good. Our generation did, we did our job. And two, integration was not just Black people integrating with white people, it was white people integrating with Black people. And I think that one of the things that we have to remember is that we all have an obligation as Americans. There's a T-shirt that I love so much, it says, we're all mutts. And I think that we forget that we are all in this thing together. And I have a great resentment, as you probably are going to hear, for this administration bringing so much hatred into our hearts. This is not a good idea. We have to find a way in 2017 to figure out where are we going to be in 2050, where are we going to be in 2100. And I'm a space freak, and I just think that there's a life form someplace. And I think that we've done not as good a job as we should do in recognizing life on Earth. So I'm very much convinced that we would not really recognize life in space. And we've got to find a way to understand that which is alive is a part of us.
So you said that your generation did your job, and you were talking about integration. What is the job of this new generation? And you're come in contact with them all the time. You must, on the campus of Virginia Tech. What's this generation's job?
I think that I think our job was to teach them that being bold and being comforting and being courageous and looking for that which is different is good. And I think that, again, I'm here at Virginia Tech, and we've done some good work. We did the work at Flint. I'm so proud of Dr. Edwards. We were the people that went up to Flint City in Michigan. We're the people that went up there and said, no, wait a minute, we can do something to help these people. That's what you want to see the next generation do. How do we help people? How do we reach out? And I think that the kids are great. I think that, again, I'm saying a right to dream, and maybe I should even say a necessity to dream, because to a great degree, we're saying to the kids, oh, you need to get a job. Don't worry about that. You need to get a job, and you need to, you know, buy a house and a car. And there's nothing wrong with houses and cars and jobs, but you need to dream. You need to allow your heart to soar and see where it will go.
If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Nikki Giovanni. She's one of Oprah's living legends. She's been an activist, an educator, a commentator, a poet, spoken word poet for years, and one of our most honored writers in the United States. And she'll be speaking here in Georgia at Georgia Southern University's Performing Arts Center. The lecture is free and open to the public, by the way. I don't think anyone would expect you, as outspoken an activist and commentator as you have been for so many years, to hold your opinion back on the political situation in the U.S. I don't think anyone would expect that.
But, you know, I'm 73, so I am. I had not expected to have emotion going into this situation. I had really thought that now, where somebody like me, my age and everything, that again, I can dream, because I agree. And again, I hate to keep bringing up John Glenn. I didn't know John or Annie, but I do work with NASA. And I thought, yeah, at 73, I would like to go into space. And I know Dr. Gordon, and we're friends. We don't hang out, but we're friends. And I've been saying to him, you know, you need to send a writer into space. I said, you need to send me into space. And he said, well, Nikki, we can send you into space, but we can't bring you back. And it's because I had lung cancer, and my left lung had to be taken out. He said, if we can send you up, but if we bring you back, you know, your organs will shift, and it'll kill you. And I'm saying, you know, but Dr. Gordon, I'm going to die one way anyway. And I think probably when I'm about 80, I would love to be on a spaceship and go up, and maybe if I'm lucky, I'll live a couple of more years. And then, of course, I'm going to die anyway. So you just open the door and let me out. And people can look up in the sky and, you know, you see a lot of the stars, but then you'll see this body just going around. Somebody says, oh, there goes Nikki. I think it'd be absolutely wonderful.
It's hard for me to break away from that image, but let me take us back to the inauguration coming up in just a few days, because I can still remember hearing the poem you wrote for Barack Obama's inauguration. I guess the changeover in administration, which is coming in just a few days, what's the best way to handle the strong emotions so many people are having?
Well, I must say I'm very proud of the Million Women March. I'm so proud that they put that together. No matter what that boy says, Meryl Streep is one of the great actresses in the world. And so I was very proud that she, too, is going to speak up. She has a right, not just a right to, but an obligation. And I wrote a poem at the end of Obama's administration for Ebony magazine. What I liked about the poem was that I wanted to take the history of lynching, and I wanted to take the man in the tree who was saying to the people who are lynching him, you may think you're killing me, but what I'm doing is dropping my seed into the ground, and I have roots, and these roots will grow. And I looked at that, and I thought, damn, I'm not a bad poet. I mean, that was a nice poem. So, you know, it's one of those kind of things that you kind of say to yourself. I don't know. I really, right now, I am a little angry, and I'm a little upset, because I think that we are not bringing the best of America out. And I'm a Tennessean by birth, which means I'm an Appalachian. And some of the best people in America are Appalachians. And I think that we in Appalachia have allowed people to take that greatness from us, that courage from us. And I think that that's sad, because when you look at the history coming from Alabama going up to Maine, if you look at the Appalachian Trail and you look at the Underground Railroad, you're seeing how we worked together. And I don't want to see us not doing that again. I'm very happy to be where I am. People tell me, oh, what are you doing? You know, you're in Virginia, but I'm not even in that part of Virginia. I'm over here in the mountains. You know, how do you do that? I said, but these are the people I've always admired. Some of the greatest, in all fairness, some of the greatest white people in America are Appalachian. And I think that they have to reclaim that history.
But those are the kind of people that are pointed to as saying, these are the ones nobody listened to. These are the kind of people that supported the administration with which you are so frustrated already.
I know, but I think that and all fairness to Barack, I think that he should have listened a little more. And if he had called me, which he didn't, and said, you know, Nikki, who should I talk to? I would have said, you know, why don't you just come on over? Let's go to West Virginia and let's have a little, some grits and some, you know, gravy and some fried chicken. And let's talk to these people, because I think that they are right to say we've been neglected. And I think that we have to ask again for that courage, because, again, I'm a space person. And when we look at the space program, who are we looking at? We're looking at Appalachians. When we look at the astronauts, who are we looking at? We're not looking at people from Los Angeles or from New York or Boston or something. We're looking at Appalachians. These are the people who dream. And I think that it was important. Nobody listens to me. I'm just a poet. But I think it was important that we talk to those people, and I'm sorry nobody did, because these people these people have a lot to offer America, their courage, their friendship. If you had a car to break down, you're in Atlanta. If you had a car to break down in Atlanta, nobody would stop and help you. But if you had a car to break down in Morgantown, half the people, you know, Pa, there's a car broken down, he would come and help you. She would give you some water, let you sit on the porch. These are great people, and I think that they have to reclaim their history.
So, just for my own curiosity, do you still question whether you're a great poet? You don't, do you? I mean, you're not insecure about your own poetry, are you?
You know, every now and then, to be fair to everybody, and I think that this is probably true of the singers or anybody, actually. You know, you this morning I had to look up a couple of things, and I was reading, and I was like, damn, that's good. But, you know, for the most part, you just take your life like it's just my life, and you go on. Otherwise, you drink too much, which I don't, or you do drugs, which I never did. You end up trying to explain your life. I just do every day, you know, and being here at Virginia Tech is really, really wonderful because, one, I loved our former president, Charles Steger, and he and I put a poetry thing together, the Steger, which is the best and the biggest undergraduate poetry prize in America. And I work now with the football coach, Wentes, and he invited me to do, he said, would you like to do an ad for us? I'd love to do an ad for you because I love football. And I must say, I cheered for Auburn. I really, really did, because I was coming to Auburn. I said, oh, I hope that they win. But I was glad to see Clemson, and I was glad to see Mr. Watson make that wonderful comeback. And it's just, you know, if you don't take it every day and enjoy it every day, and I'm lucky because I have really, really wonderful students, and you're just trying to enjoy life. So you don't look at it and say, oh, I'm important. You look at it and say, how can I share something? What can I do? Am I making sense?
You are.
So if you take yourself too seriously, you'll end up being a fool. And I never really wanted to be a fool.
So my last question for you would be, should Donald Trump call? What if he reached out to talk with you? Would you sit down with him?
I was invited, which is neither here nor there, to, you know, they do that. What would you tell Trump if he is the president? Says nothing to tell Trump because Trump doesn't listen to people like me, and I'd be a fool to think that he does. I would. See, that's when you get into that. I think I'm important because I know better. I know that Donald Trump is not going to listen to somebody like me, so it's no point in me wasting my time trying to talk to somebody like Donald Trump. I want to talk to somebody in the, you know, eighth grade who is now saying, well, what should I do? And I'm saying, well, I think you should read, you know, Ivan, the one and only Ivan, which I love. It's a great, great book. Or my favorite book of all is Mrs. What's her name in the Rats of Nim?
Frisbee. Mrs. Frisbee in the Rats of Nim.
Thank you very much. My mind went
blank.
I
love that book. And the one and only Ivan is another children's novel by, I think, Catherine Applegate.
So, yeah. Yeah. And it's so wonderful because Ivan, and I was reading that on the beach recently and crying because I've read it and I read it again. And people came up with, you know, why are you crying? I said, well, all Ivan wanted to do for Ruby was to keep his word to Ruby's mother. And all I want to do is keep my word to my grandmother. That's all you want to do. And it's no point in me trying to talk to somebody who's not going to talk to me. That's a waste of, that's an arrogance that I don't have.
That was award-winning poet Nikki Giovanni speaking with my colleague Celeste Headley. Nikki is lecturing tomorrow night at 7 at Georgia Southern University's Performing Arts Center in Statesboro. It's part of the school's annual celebration of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. The event is free and open to the public. On Friday, we'll talk about presidential inaugurations as Donald Trump prepares to become the 45th president of the United States. In 2009, Nikki Giovanni was asked by NPR to write an unofficial inaugural poem for President Obama. Here she is reading that work, entitled Roll Call, A Song of Celebration.
I'm Barack Obama, and I'm here to say I'm president of the USA. I'll walk the streets and knock on doors. Share with the folks, not my dreams, but yours. I'll talk with the people, I'll listen and learn. I'll make the butter, then clean the churn. My wife is pretty, my children are sweet. We need one puppy to be complete. I represented in Springfield, senated in D.C., articulating all the while what change means to me. Some folks said, wait, some said, not now. But here I am, quite ready to take that president vow. The time is now for us to stand, because we all know, yes, we can. Yes, we can. Yes, we can.
That's Nikki Giovanni reading her 2009 poem, Roll Call, A Song of Celebration. She was commissioned by NPR to write it for President Obama's first inauguration.